It's good to see you here tonight, nice and dry in our auditorium. Hopefully everyone's getting their life straightened out. Those of you that have been flooded out are getting everything back together. Let's go to the book of Nehemiah. As you know, we're studying Nehemiah here on Wednesday night. And tonight we're going to go to Nehemiah chapter 4. And the title of the sermon tonight is Dealing with Discouragement. Dealing with Discouragement. You know, there was a man who was once court-martialed and sentenced to a year's imprisonment for being a discourager. That's historically true. This happened during the Boer War in South Africa when the British fought the Boers at a certain siege against this a city called Ladysmith. One historian says the fortunes of the town and garrison were hanging in the balance, and this civilian would go along the lines and speak discouraging words to the men on duty. He goes on to say, he struck no blow for the enemy, not one. He was just a discourager at that critical time. And the court-martial judged it a crime to speak disheartening words in an hour like that. And so they took the guy and they threw him in jail. Can you imagine? Well, now, as we come here to Nehemiah chapter 4, what we're going to find is that Nehemiah had some discouragers around him. This was a very critical time for Nehemiah. If you've been with us in the study, when we looked at chapter 3, it looked like everything was going really well, and of course it was. Nehemiah had everything organized, and first we saw that Nehemiah, first of all, agonized in prayer because he saw the situation in Jerusalem, and God opened up a great door for him to go to the city of Jerusalem. He was in Shushan, the palace, but under the king Artaxerxes, he had an open door. The king even gave him letters of permission to travel, plus supplies that he would need to do this job. And then when he got to Jerusalem, he went around kind of one night on kind of a reconnaissance, surveying the situation, and he was, we could say he was visualizing what needed to happen. And then he kind of mobilized the people. He got them all together and said, here's what God has done. And all the people responded by saying, let us rise up and build. And then we saw in chapter 3 last week, where that, the week before, I think. Anyway, I lose track, but you know what I mean. In chapter 3, we saw that everything was going well. He was organizing. He divided the wall up into certain sections. He had certain groups working in 42 sections around the wall, and some people were working so diligently, so hard. They're pointed out in chapter 3. Others were doing double labor. They were doing one section of the wall, and then they were doing another. And so everything was going very, very well. Now, let me just say this as a general rule. When you're doing something for God and things are going well, you better watch out, because that's when Satan likes to attack. There will always be opposition to anything that you attempt to do for God, and it's going well. It's like someone said, when God's people have a mind to work, then the enemy has a mind to wreck. And this is what we're going to see here in chapter number 4. Opposition comes. In fact, what we'll see really is a pattern. There's kind of an advance, and then we see a setback. And then we see another advance, and then there's another setback. And then another advance, and so we see this pattern actually from chapter 4 all the way through chapter 6. So this is the phase of Nehemiah's work where he has to overcome these setbacks, and he has to push on. And by doing that, he really exemplifies for us what it is to be a true godly leader and how to overcome discouragement when it comes. But what we see really in chapter 4 to chapter 6 are some of Satan's devices. Because if you want to know what Satan is doing, look at what he's already done. You know, Satan doesn't come up with any new tricks. Just find out what he's already done, because he uses the same old tools. He'll recycle some of those tools and bring them back out. But what he has done is what he will do. And so we kind of see some of Satan's devices that he uses against God's people. And the device that we're going to see here in chapter 4 is the device of discouragement. He's going to try to discourage the work. He's going to try to discourage Nehemiah. It may be that you're in that situation tonight. God's been good to you. Things have been going well. But suddenly, some things have happened and there's discouragement that's beginning to set in. Well, let's look at discouragement and how to deal with it. And I want you to see three things about it. First of all, if you're taking notes, write down the curse of discouragement. I want us to look and kind of examine how it kind of operates here. It was G.K. Chesterton that said, the Bible tells us to love our neighbors, also to love our enemies, probably because they're sometimes the same people. Well, that's true here for Nehemiah. Look at verse number 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. When Nehemiah arrives and things are going well, there was the threat now of Sanballat and his associates who want to keep the Jewish people weak. He doesn't want to see that wall built up. And so he begins to try his wiles to discourage Nehemiah. And so here's one of the things we learn about discouragement. It's critical. There are critical people that will be raised up around us. And this is what Sanballat is doing. Notice where it says he's wroth. That is a word that means burning mad. He is just angry that the Jews are there rebuilding that wall. And he wants to secure his hold on Jerusalem. He wants to be someone who is dominant over that region. And so he goes around now to sowing seeds of discouragement. And he begins to be critical and mock Nehemiah and the Jews. You know, one of Satan's greatest weapons is ridicule. He'll just ridicule people. Thomas Carlyle called ridicule the language of the devil. Shakespeare said ridicule was paper bullets to the brain. But let me tell you, some of those paper bullets have slain many a warrior. There are some people that can stand up under a lot of pressure, but they wither and crumble when they're ridiculed. And so this is what's happening here. Notice what he says in verse number 2. And he spake before his brethren, the army of Samaria, and said, what do these feeble Jews? Here's these feeble Jews. What are they? They're so small. They're not going to be able to do anything. It's just a small handful of these Jews. And sometimes the world will say that about the church. What are these Christians going to be able to do? It's just, they're in the minority. They're just a small group, you know. But friend, let me just give a warning out to those who may think that way. God uses small groups. Remember Gideon's 300? Remember it was a little boy named David that slew Goliath? I heard about a man who wanted a job as a woodcutter, and he went to the foreman, and he said, I would like to apply. And the foreman looked at him and said, you're very small. I don't know if you can chop wood. He said, there's some trees over there. Let me see if you can chop them down. And that guy went through those trees like a human buzzsaw, whackety-whack, choppity-chop. Those trees just fell. And the foreman said, where did you learn to cut wood? He said, the Sahara forest. He said, you mean the Sahara desert? He said, yeah, now it's a desert. Don't judge a man by his size. And, you know, don't judge God's people by their size. But look, notice the taunting questions that he gives them in verse number 2. He said, will they fortify themselves? Are they going to be able to build this wall and fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? It implies it will take more than prayer and worship to rebuild this city. That's what they were implying there. And that was kind of a blasphemous statement against their God. It's going to take more than that. Will they finish in a day? Again, that's sarcasm. In other words, they don't really understand how difficult this task is. They have no idea. Look at verse number 3. And now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Well, if a fox comes and tries to climb this wall, he'll break it down. That's how feeble this wall is. That's how weak this wall will be. And so he uses criticism to sow seeds of discouragement. Let me just say again, that's how Satan works. Don't listen to the criticism. You know, it's easy to criticize. Very easy to do that. You have to belittle to belittle. And it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to be critical. But notice it's critical, but also notice it's concentrated. Look at verse number 7. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up, and that the breaches began to be stopped, they were very wroth. Now, what I want you to see here is how these names that are given and these people groups kind of, if you look at a map geographically, they kind of surround the city of Jerusalem. There's Sanballat of Samaria. There's Tobiah of Ammon. There's the Arabians. There's the men of Ashdod. And again, if you look at that on a map, you would see Samaria was to the north, and Ammon was to the east, and the Arabs was to the south, and Ashdod was to the west. And so we could just really look at it and say, this attack was from all sides. It was from all around. Reminds me of the story of the Lone Ranger, who was out riding on a prairie with Tonto, and here came a band of Indians riding north. And so he started to ride south, and he saw a band of Indians coming south. And then he started to ride east, and there was a band of Indians riding east. And then he went west, and there was another band riding west. And he was literally surrounded. And he said to Tonto, what are we going to do, Tonto? And Tonto said, what do you mean we, Paleface? You're on your own here. Here is Nehemiah, and he is surrounded by enemies. And they're coming from all over. And sometimes that's the way Satan works. When you get bad news, it'll come from home. Then you'll get a report from maybe school and the job and then church. And it just seems like one thing after another, financial news, family news, physical news about your physical health and all these things. And it just seems like there's a point in time when you're being hit from all sides. That's what Satan does to discourage you. You know, we see this in the story of Job, don't we? He was just hit, bam, 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 all of a sudden like. It was Winston Churchill that said, we must always be ready at our average moment to meet what the enemy will bring at us at his select moment. And so a lot of times when the attack comes, it's concentrated. And so it's critical, it's concentrated, but also it's clever. Look at verse 6. So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Now, what I want you to see here is that this is right at the zenith of their work. Notice where it says they had a mind to work. They were working hard. Everything was going like a well-oiled machine. It was all running so smoothly. It was halfway done. How many of you know that when you're halfway through something, that's when sometimes it gets rough? You know, they're halfway done. This was a very critical time, a very strategic time, a very vulnerable time when they least expected it. Everything was going so well. You know, Satan knows exactly the time when to hit you. He knows exactly the time when to come at you. And a lot of times it is when you're halfway done. Man, you've made so much progress. You're pushing forward to this goal. Perhaps the Lord has given you a goal or a purpose, and you know, you're in that and you're halfway done. Maybe it's going to college, you're halfway through college, or you're halfway through a semester, or halfway through a year, halfway through a project. You know, when these people started out, there was enthusiasm. They were all together. Let's rise up and build. Now they're halfway done, and bam, here comes Satan, and he hits them, and he hits them good. It might be that, you know, you had a spiritual goal. You're going to get up early in the morning. You're going to be in God's Word. You're going to pray. And you started out and there's excitement and you have a new joy, a new walk of the Lord. And then something happens that discourages you. And the newness of what you were doing kind of wears off. And now it becomes just a spiritual duty. You have to beware. You know, that's where Satan likes to work. And so we see it's critical, it's concentrated, it's clever. But also think about this, it's contagious. That's another thing about this curse of discouragement. It's contagious. Look at verse number 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of the burdens is decayed. Now, I want you to notice who's saying this. And Judah said, this is a discouraging remark, and it comes from Judah. Now, why is that important to note? Well, because Judah was the lead tribe. Judah was the leader of the tribes respected by the Jews, you see. Do you remember in Genesis 49 when Jacob summoned his sons because he wanted to give them blessings and also warnings about the future? And listen to what Jacob said about Judah. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be upon the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. You know what he was saying there? Judah, you're going to be the leader among the people. You're going to be the lead tribe. Your families, your brothers shall praise you. Did you know that in the Old Testament, when God situated the tribes around the tabernacle, that at the very front of the tabernacle, where the door was located, that's where Judah was. Judah was situated in front of the door. You know why? Judah was the lead tribe. They're the leaders. And you know what? If the leaders get discouraged, you can rest assured the people are going to get discouraged. You know what? Something about discouragement, it is contagious. And so we have to be aware of that. Remember in Numbers 13, and Moses sent out some spies to spy out the land. They were leaders from their tribes, and they brought back a terrible report. And you know what? It discouraged the rest of the people. And so discouragement is contagious. You see, Judah's name means praise. He should be praising God. Judah should be leading the people and pointing people to the Lord through praise. And so it's contagious. That's the curse of discouragement. Now, let me tell you another thing. Let's look at another topic. We've talked about the curse of it and how effective it is. But let's talk number two about the cause of it. What are some of the reasons, again, that brought on this discouragement? Well, just write down fatigue. Look again in verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of the burdens is decay. And the word decay here means staggering, failing, tottering, stumbling. Very simply, they were exhausted. They were physically tired. They were exhausted. They had been working for a long time. And their strength was just waning. Again, they were halfway finished. Again, this is the most difficult times. Sometimes discouragement is simply the result of being overworked. You know, sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is to go to sleep. Not right now. Let me rephrase. Sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is after church. Go home. Go to bed. Get 8 good hours of sleep. Because sometimes discouragement is just a result of fatigue or tired. And they needed to rest. One French philosopher said this, I have so much to do today, I simply must go to bed. Vince Lombardi said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. There's a lot of wisdom in that. And so there's fatigue. That could be a cause. And then there's frustration. Look again in verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of the burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish. Now, think about that. The people began looking at all the debris that was around, the rubbish that was around this building site, and it kind of played a part in discouraging them. You know what the problem is? The problem is they got their eyes off the building that was going on, and they began to focus on the rubbish. You know, I can just imagine how this happens. They're building things. Things are going so well. Someone critical comes along and starts pointing out all the rubbish they see. Look at that pile of rubbish over there. Look at it, look at all this rubbish that's around here. And pretty soon, the people take their eyes off of the work, what's happening, what God is doing, and now they're focusing instead on the rubbish. They're not looking at the good things. They're looking at the negative things. Now, I'll just tell you this. I've never been to a building site where there wasn't rubbish. Every building site you've ever been to where things are happening is going to have piles of rubbish around. And I'll tell you something else. Whenever God is working, that doesn't mean there's going to be an absence of problems or friction. In fact, the friction and the problems might be an indication that God is doing things. And so a lot of times what will happen is some people will come along and they'll point out some of the problems and some of the frictions, and what they'll fail to see is what God is doing. And that's a bad outlook. And let me just say, there's never a perfect church. There's always going to be problems. And so get your eyes off the problem. Stop focusing on the problem. Someone said that there are some people who have the gift of finding a manure pile in a beautiful meadow. Get your eyes off of the bad things. But now they're frustrated. There's fatigue. There's frustration, which leads to failure. Look again in verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decay. There is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. And so these people seemed to reach a state to where it seemed as if they could not go on. Whereas before we saw they had a mind to work, now their whole outlook and mindset is different. They don't have a mind to work anymore. They've developed this negative outlook. And again, that's exactly what Satan wants. He wants them to lose heart. And these people have lost heart. And by the way, Satan wants you to lose heart. He wants to discourage you. You ever hear the expression, in the doldrums? Someone's in the doldrums. You know what that comes from? This is actually a part of the ocean near the equator that's called the doldrums. And the reason it's called that, it's a place where it just seems like when a vessel gets there, it doesn't make a whole lot of progress. It's an area that abounds with baffling winds that makes it hard for any vessel to sail through there. And so it just looks like there's no progress that's being made. It's called the doldrums. And a lot of times, spiritually, that's where people can get in the doldrums. And that's where these people were. They said, we're not able. We can't do what we were doing. And so they were discouraged. And so there's a failure that comes because of their negative outlook. But also, here's another thing. We saw fatigue and frustration and failure. Let's write down fear. Fear. Look in verse 11. And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. You know what's happening now? Now they're beginning to listen to the threats of the enemy. They're going to hit you before you know it. They're going to hit you when you least expect it. You better watch out. They're around. In fact, the Jews from the outlying villages were bringing these reports to those that were working on the wall. You better watch out. They're going to hit you before you know it. And this didn't happen just one time. Did you notice that expression in verse 12? 10 times. They said unto us 10 times. That is, they just keep saying this. This is really emphasizing this rumor just keeps being repeated over and over and over. And it was a lie. And you never notice how a rumor or a lie just seems to get traction sometimes. And it just keeps getting repeated again and again. Someone said a lie runs around the world while the truth is tying its shoes. And so it's being repeated again and again. And so here's this external pressure now that amplifies the internal weakness. And there's fear. Well, fear will paralyze you. It'll keep you from doing what God wants you to do. Fear is the dark room where negatives are developed. Now, let me give you the third thing. We saw the curse of discouragement and the causes of discouragement. But then write down, here's the good part. Here's what I want you to really hear. The cure for discouragement. How does Nehemiah deal with this? He's got a lot on him. And again, to us, he's an example. We can learn so much from this faithful man of God. How does he deal with this discouragement when it comes? Well, I want you just to write down these other things. If you haven't written anything down so far, make sure you write down the cure. Because let me tell you what he does. Here's the first thing. He brings the matter to God in prayer. Remember we said Nehemiah was a man of prayer? Go back to chapter 4, verse 4. Look what he says. This is after they had come and they were critical. Look at verse 4. Hear, O God, our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee. For they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So you know what he does facing this opposition? Hearing these taunts, these criticisms, Nehemiah, he just goes to God in prayer. Lord, you turn it all back on them. Lord, you take care of them. And they're enemies. They're trying to hinder us. Lord, you, Lord, take care of this situation. And so we learn here that the first thing we have to do when we're discouraged is to go to God in prayer. Take it to the Lord. What a great example for us. Bring it to the Lord in prayer. But here's the second thing. Write this down. Develop a warrior mentality. Develop a warrior mentality. Look at verse 13. Therefore set I in lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. Now Nehemiah realized that he was in a fight, so you know what he did? He armed the people with weapons, and then he grouped them together. And so he had them armed and ready in case there was a fight. You know what we need to realize? It'll be a great day when we all realize that in the Christian life, you're not just a saint, you're a soldier. You are in a fight. And every morning when you wake up, you got to realize that Satan's out to get you. You have to have that warrior mentality. And as Christians, we dare not go into battle without our weapons, without our armor. What did Paul say? We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers in the darkness of this world. And that's why Paul gives us our armor. Our armor are not physical weapons. They are spiritual weapons. Do you know what your armor is? You better learn what it is. You better put on that spiritual armor because you're in a spiritual war. And in our Sunday school class, our DIG class, we're going over Ephesians 6. The armor of God, piece by piece. We're looking at it. But in studying that, I read of a story in Ephesus. There's this ancient story of an Ephesian wrestler. And the story goes that this man was undefeated, match after match. He was amazing to the spectators. He would just defeat anyone. And what they found out was that he was wearing an Ephesian grimata. That is, he was wearing around his ankle some magic spells that were written, a grimata was written out, folded up, put in a little anklet, and they were supposedly magic spells that gave him a spiritual power over his opponents. And when the officials found that out, they had him remove that grimata, and in the next three matches, he was defeated successively. And so maybe Paul's thinking about that when he says, you know what? We're like that as Christians. We're not wrestling against flesh and blood. We're wrestling against powers of darkness, spiritual wickedness in high places. You better have that warrior mentality. But here's the third thing. Bring the matter to God in prayer. Develop a warrior mentality. Number three, stay focused on the Lord. Stay focused on the Lord. Look at verse 14. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. This was Nehemiah's battle cry. Remember the Lord. I like that. Remember the Lord. In other words, get your mind off of the enemy and the rubble. And remember God. And so what's he doing? He's putting their focus back on God. This God who had already accomplished so many things for them providentially. Nehemiah is saying, think about the Lord. Focus back on the Lord, not on your problems. You know, a lot of times, it's very simple, but that's what we need to do. Set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth. Focus on the Lord. But here's a fourth thing. Be vigilant while you work. Be vigilant while you work. Look down in verse number 15. And it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, everyone unto his work. You know, sometimes the best thing to do when you're discouraged is just get back to work. Just go on back to work. That's what Nehemiah does here. God brought their counsel to naught. So don't sit around and self-pity and brood and think about what could have been. That was a close call. No. Nehemiah said, let's get back to work. Let's get back to work. Let's get back doing what the Lord wants us to do. And that's not all. Look at verse 16. And it came to pass that from that time forth, that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows and the habergons, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. So he divided the labor force. Half of them worked on the wall. The other half guarded the work. Half were ready to build. The other half were ready to battle. In other words, they stayed vigilant while they worked. They got back to work, but they worked with vigilance, knowing that the enemy could attack. And even the workers that still were working, they had a sword strapped to them because they were ready at any moment. And in verse 18, every man had a sword, and Nehemiah had a trumpet beside him so he could sound an alarm immediately if the enemy came. And so just think about it. They had a sword on one hand and a trowel in the other. They were building. They were battling. You know, Charles Spurgeon, when he started his church magazine in 1865, he named it The Sword and the Trowel after this passage here in Nehemiah. And he said, it is a record of combat with sin and labor for the Lord. And that's what we do in the Christian life. We're constantly fighting a war on one hand. We're fighting against the devil. We're fighting against the conformity of this world trying to lure us in. We're fighting against sin. And on the other hand, we are not only battling, but we're building with the Word of God. We're building ourselves in our faith and so on. And so this is what's going on here. He's just getting back to work. I like the way Alan Redpath explained what was going on here. He said this. He said, the people had a mind to work. They had a heart to pray. They had an eye to watch. They had an ear to hear. And this gave them the victory. That's good. And this gave them the victory. Let me give you another thing. Bring the matter to God. Develop that warrior mentality. Stay focused on the Lord. Be vigilant while you work. And here's the next thing. Determine a rallying point. This is what Nehemiah does. Look in verse 19. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. Verse 20. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, and our God shall fight for us. You know what he's doing here? Nehemiah is commanding the people. He's saying, look, we're all spread out here in this work. Everyone's along this wall here. And if you picture ancient Jerusalem, it's so spread out, that wall goes around. It's about 10 acres, really, that wall covers. And Nehemiah says, we're all so spread out here on this wall, but when you hear the sound of the trumpet, I want everyone to just come together, and we'll all come together, and we'll rally together. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, that will be our rallying point when we just need to come together sometimes while we're working. And that's a good principle. You know what our rallying point is? The church. We're here tonight. Whenever God's people are supposed to meet, the church is the rallying point. We all come together. You know, back then it was when the trumpet sounded. And then, when the trumpet sounded, they would all gather together. They would rally together. They would encourage one another. You know, one time I was in Africa in a village, and I was supposed to preach at this church. And I got to the church, and nobody was there. Not a soul. And I thought, well, they must have heard I was coming. But then a fellow came in, and he had a drum. He had a wooden drum, and he just started banging on that drum. And you know what happened? People just started coming in all over. And pretty soon, that building was filled with 1,000 people. I'd say within 10 or 15 minutes, 1,000 people had all gathered there together, and they're all ready to hear the word. They just were waiting to hear the sound of the drum, you know. But Nehemiah here, he's doing the same thing. He says, look, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, let's all gather together. This will be our rallying point. And folks, when we come to God's house on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, this is our rallying point here. This is where we encourage one another. If you're discouraged, the place to be is around the people of God in the house of God. That's the place where we get our encouragement from one another. But here's the next thing. Serve others. Just serve others. Look in verse number 21 and 22. So we labored in the work, and half of them held their spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. And so the final thing that Nehemiah does to dispel discouragement was to occupy the people with just serving one another In essence, what he's saying is, hey, we need your help. We need to help each other. We need to assist each other. And so through each night, some workers stood guard, and others, knowing the city was vulnerable for attack, they would also watch. And then others would sleep while some guarded, and others were laboring while some guarded, but they were constantly watching each other's back, we could say. They were constantly serving each other. In fact, they were so busy. Look at verse 23. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, save that everyone put them off for washing. In other words, they were so busy, they didn't even take their clothes off to clean up after work. They had been diligent at all this time just serving. Just serving. Now, if you want to be miserable, just be self-centered. Just be selfish. Just think about yourself all the time. If you turn your love inward, you're going to be unhappy. But if you turn your love outward and you think of others and you serve others, you know what? That's the way to real joy. That's the way to real happiness. You know what? That'll overcome any discouragement. When you start looking to others, when you serve others, you don't have time to be discouraged because you're busy helping other people the way God wants us to. And so we see then the cure for discouragement. I'll close with this. We're about out of time, but one historian observed this. He said, Rome remained great as long as she had enemies who forced her to unity, vision, and heroism. As long as she had enemies that forced her to unity, vision, and heroism, Rome was strong. But when Rome overcame all her enemies, she flourished for a moment and then began to die. That's an incredible insight. In other words, what's the point? Opposition kept Rome strong. And there's a principle there, I think, for the Christian life. Why does God allow me to have opposition? Why does God allow me to go through these things? Because opposition keeps you strong. It keeps us unified, dependent upon each other. It keeps us with a vision to move forward for God. And that's what God was doing here with his work in this in the book of Nehemiah here. And I think that's what God might be doing in your life. The opposition that he allows is so that you might be strong, that you might grow as the Lord wants you to. Let's bow together for prayer. And it might be that while our heads are bowed, you say, I kind of needed this word tonight. Just a little discouraged. And I pray that the Lord will help me to see these things and apply these principles. Is that your prayer tonight? Would you just say, pray for me, preacher. I want to overcome whatever discouragement that Satan tries to put in my path. And I want to be encouraged for him. God bless you, dear friend. God bless all of you. All of us face this from time to time. All of us do. God bless you. Father, I pray that you would just stir the hearts of these, your servants. Those who had upraised hands, I pray that you would, just with fresh vigor, just move mightily in their heart. And Lord, you it says in your word that you are our glory. You are the lifter up of our heads. And I pray, Lord, that you'll do that for every soul that's been reaching out to you tonight and saying, look, God, help me. Help me. We know the enemy is real. We know he wants to take the heart out of people to discourage them. Lord, I pray that you'll give us victory over that. And Lord, may we apply these principles. May we learn from the life of Nehemiah. May we leave tonight encouraged in the Lord. As David said, David encouraged himself in the Lord. Lord, help that to be us as we think about these things. We pray all this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.